probably the only show
Sybil's
had both selfish one. Yeah, he's a big military guy in Friday's Red. And he's got me into the habit of when I get up Friday, I look red.
Okay.
And wear on Friday. And now Bob's not there anymore to be the,
so there
be
are the red sleeves. So,
one L or two L's?
No, that winery.
It's red wine.
It's red wine. Yeah.
Her winery. Oh, gosh. So I have the one that is not highlighted, is what I have in my notes. One is highlighted, which is what Jen Sybil found online. I think it's just the way that Spanish.
I'll see her. I'll give her a day off. I think that's best. She gave a great presentation about it. They dig a trench 6 feet deep, dig out all this volcanic clay, both with organic matter. Covered over again and using the same precaution. Pretty interesting.
Pretty expensive.
6 feet. 6 feet deep.
This is in Uruguay.
Wait,
all.
To be very clear.
But you know, sister county.
But it's the way that they are using.
And are you guys to divine this coming from?
I have a couple of questions.
It's about
real life extraordinary.
Nuts. Yeah.
Max in with you.
Okay, Stephanie, recording?
Yep.
I'm 9 o'clock. We have a quorum. I think 10.
Now they're over there.
For 9 or 10?
9. We need 9.
Do I have 9s? Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the order of October 1st, 2025 Zoning Ordinance Committee meeting. Is there any public input? No. Seeing none, any disclosures?
Sorry. Sorry about that.
Good morning, how are you?
Everyone's attention.
Are you good?
No, hold on. I don't know what it is.
I should do my disclosure now while the tape's off.
Yep, that's the one.
Okay. We're good. Sorry about that.
No problem. We had 2 emails come in late last night, one from Kelly Fortman and one from Becky Ward to Zoc that Stephanie and I were talking about. Popped into hers this morning. We'll get those sent out. They were just letters on the B&B stuff. But I will say that Becky Ward had some questions that I think we need to take a look at, because there are questions like, why is Zoc doing
good?
And I think we need to, I think we owe her a response because there are some questions in here. So we just need to take a look at that.
Good.
Any other disclosures? So before we do approval of the action report, I have one major change that Gwen wants to the minutes. At the bottom of page 3 of 4, there's a reference in the last line to RISCR, which should say RISCR, R-S-C-R. And I'm going to say that's, go ahead.
I noticed that there are a few typos in the speakers' names.
Okay.
Trinity Mills, not Bells.
Is that M-I-L-L-S?
Yes.
Okay.
And Avis Renshaw, not Crenshaw.
R-E-N?
Yes.
Can you see? Okay.
Just take off the C.
Add the R.
Leave the R. It already has an R.
Oh, it has a little R.
Make it a capital.
I got it. Okay. Any other?
I admitted those present. Jeff Browning was present.
You have proof of this? He talked to me after the meeting.
Okay, cool. I just arrowed you up to be sick. Any other comments on the minutes? Do you want to make a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
You with those changes. All right. Brian.
All right. Going through some of the updates. First one is the floodplain ordinance update that you guys heard last meeting. Staff, and I believe Gwen is, yeah, she's still here. So if there's anything you want to add, Gwen, certainly But they are going back. They're working on the draft language, and they expect to return to ZOC on your next meeting, November 5th. Anything else you'd like to add?
To the accessory uses. So we'll provide, we're still looking at it and thinking it through. Some different options. Well,
The next one is the data center standards and locations, phase two. Really, the update is that it's still, project plan is still being, we're still on track with project plan. If you look at project plan, we do expect to come to ZOC with language that staff come up with at the February meeting, planning, and then shooting for a board update in May and the planning commission in July. That's all in the project plan, but just to highlight those items for you guys. With the zoning ordinance rewrite adjustments, number one, so because some of these other text amendments that we have going forward, that time frame is a little bit off and we expected it might shift. So we are expecting to bring language to the board in June of 26. So that puts us, it gives us a little extra room bringing draft language here to ZOC so that we can work in between Walrus and the floodplain ordinance update, that type of thing. But we are looking at June of 26 to get those adjustments done. Is that your question?
Well, I had a question relative to that. Like, what happens to the phase two zillion?
It's still, this is number one. But yeah, we don't anticipate everything to be taken care of. And things are continually being discovered as we go through things. So,
because the follow-up question I had, we had a meeting with the fire marshal's office. And I guess,
speak up.
I had a meeting with the fire marshal's office and they have proposed some additional language related to battery storage facilities.
Okay.
And they thought that it was being included in phase one, which I didn't think was possible. But I think it's probably phase two.
Right. I can reach out to them because, again, one of the thresholds for phase one is that we're not introducing remove regulation.
Yeah, that's what this would be.
Okay.
So just kind of want to understand the phase two timeline because it affects the fire marshal office.
I'm going to make a note there and I'll reach out to them. Make sure that we're all on the same page.
I guess I had one. Is the box for adjustments for phase one closed? Or since it's pushed out, if it meets the requirements, can it slip in?
From my standpoint, it's closed.
Okay.
I can always be convinced otherwise.
Okay.
Any other questions about the zoning ordinance rewrite adjustments? Okay. Then we're to the big one today, Western Mountain Rural Uses and Standards, Walrus, as we love to call it here. And really for that, I've got Brian Wilson and Dave Schneigenberg, and I'll turn it over to them.
Okay, thank you everybody. I'm sure most of you are aware of the background of Western Loudoun Rural Uses and Standards, but just to give you the cursory overview, obviously we had quite a bit of feedback during the zoning ordinance rewrite. Most of you were involved in that process at different levels. During that time and really going back even further, we did have quite a bit of feedback and interest in some of the zoning ordinance regulations in Western Loudoun. At the time, the board decided based on the amount of input that they were receiving here in Western Loudoun on zoning issues, that there would be too much work to do to still get the zoning ordinance rewrite adopted and include all those changes. So that's how this project essentially was born. Authorized to begin the project in September of 2024. Got the presentation here. How do I say that? So, you know, essentially, the project is really more focused on zoning now. As we've gone through the original direction, we're, you know, looking at potentially any necessary comprehensive plan amendments. The board was a little hesitant on that. So, you know, if there are any major policy shifts in zoning language that would require a comprehensive plan amendment, that would occur. But right now, we're not anticipating major changes to any comprehensive plan language. But essentially, the project is truly a zoning-heavy project where we're looking at the zoning language in Western Lum. And there are some specific categories that the project plan outlines that we are to focus on. It's not, you know, all encompassing, but, you know, all zoning requirements in Western Lum. We have specific items we've been tasked with. If we can go to the next slide here. The project plan, at least for facilitating the initial input, that's being done with the stakeholder groups at the team meetings. You can see the items that we are discussing at those TLEC meetings. That's been going on since November of last year. We've completed four, we've completed five now, since last night. The first four, Livery Stables Outdoor Recreation, Egg Processing, Vineyard Farming, and Breakfast. Farm Wineries and Limited Breweries and Limited Distilleries were the first four. You can go to the next slide. We have three TLUC stakeholder meetings left. We just completed Mountainside Overlay and Signage last night. So we've got October for lodging uses, which is essentially a continuation of the bed and breakfast discussion that we held at the April meeting. Then in November, we have food trucks, food service, and rural restaurants, and a continuation of the farm wineries, limited breweries, limited distilleries discussion that we had in July. Essentially, what we didn't finish at that group was more the event focused portion of that discussion regarding events and the wineries and breweries. The final meeting, we don't have a date for yet, but we're anticipating that it will be in early 2026. So we've got about 4 or 5 months of stakeholder input meetings left on the schedule. That is essentially the first phase. Now TLUC has decided that they are going to do three direction meetings on the remaining issues. So as we come out of the Mountainside Overlay District Science meeting that we held last night, we had a discussion. We weren't given any direction on language at that meeting last night. So in between these meetings here, we are going to go to regular TLUC meetings where TLUC is going to discuss what they've heard at these stakeholder input meetings and give staff direction on what they want to see for language. So those TLUC directional meetings will be occurring through the end of the year, probably roughly November, December, January, and then the last one will be after that outstanding issues stakeholder input. But once we get out of
So to date, have staff been given any direction from TLUC?
So what we would say is we have, based on the first three TLUC meetings, how they formatted those stakeholder input we were given direction. We're not going to retroactively go back. You know, starting from the wineries, farm brebreweries, limited breweries, limited distilleries, and moving on. Those meetings, we don't have official direction yet. So there's going to be three TLUC meetings when we combine essentially the last five stakeholder input meetings, discuss all of those TLUC.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
If I may. Sure. Ryan, with lodging uses, because that would fall into that first grouping, that's still in process. So
yes.
Have you gotten direction from TLUC on lodging uses, or do you anticipate that after October? Because we have some language in our packet.
Yes.
And that's still in process.
Yes. Yes. What we discuss at the October meeting will be brought forward to our TLEC direction. There is language that we do have.
We do have language, but it was removed from today's packet. It wasn't last month's packet. We are going to reopen that discussion with TLUC at that TLUC meeting and then come back to you guys with that lodging language after we have that direction meeting with TLUC.
Terrific. Thank you. I think that helps.
So, yes, if we go to the next slide here. Yeah, looking at the timeline, which is really more important for you as a group, ZOC would be considered the second phase of this project, and we're beginning the second phase while the first phase is still going on. That's just as for scheduling purposes. There's going to be a lot of overlap in this project, but we're anticipating roughly seven meetings with ZOC. We've outline roughly through April, May for your final input and, making sure that we're, following through with the policy direction that TLUC has given us and the language we're presented is the best that it can be. The third phase would be the Planning Commission phase, which is essentially allocated for the second half of 2026, summer through the end of the year. Anticipating roughly three public hearings plus workshop sessions with the Planning Commission. And then that final phase, which would be Board of Supervisors, would essentially be roughly maybe the end of the year, but more likely January through probably now we're looking at early summer, May, June, rather than the public here. Again, we're anticipating multiple work sessions there at the board to ramp this up. So it's a long project. We're still really in the early phases of stakeholder input, but this is essentially the beginning of phase two, and looking at language that staff has actually put together. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions? Are we going to now go through the sections?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. I'll save my.
Go to the next slide.
Brian, can you see?
I'm sorry. Yeah. No, I can see. Thank you.
This is the ZOC timeline.
Sorry, go back.
Yeah, if you go back one there, you'll see. Basically, this is what we're anticipating for, for language discussion. And you see a lot of TBDs there, obviously highly dependent on A, getting the language done, and B, making sure we're out of the TLEC means as far as direction goes. But again, that we're anticipating going through April, May time frame with ZOC.
Is this PowerPoint on the ZOC website? It was in the packet last month.
It's in the packet. Right?
The same one? You didn't change it from
September. No, I only added a few sections based off of content that was added, but this is the same information.
Let's just send this out when we're done.
Hey, Brian, I got a question. Why does it say TLUC date? That's supposed to be ZOC date?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Oh yeah.
Scratch your mind.
So long ago, that's it.
Thanks, Jason.
Oh, the door was locked.
Next.
Yes. To fix that before you send it.
Yes.
Write it down.
Okay. So before I jump into the revisions, I do want to give an overview of how we are going to be bringing the draft text to you and how we envision the meetings going in the future. As we did with today's meeting, we'll be providing the draft text and then a cover memo as well to give a brief overview of what the proposed changes are. So we ask that you come with any comments or questions that you may have over the proposed changes. Today, we'll be discussing the draft text from the November 21st, January.
We have a really loud AC back here, so we're having trouble. You speak up.
Yeah, so we'll be discussing from the November the November 21st, January 29th, and April 24th special TLUC meetings based on the direction we received from TLUC during those meetings. You may notice, or you have already noticed, that the topics are grouped together by, the draft text is grouped together by topics rather than chapters. So there's a likelihood that you'll see chapters more than once because they kind of intertwine with one another. So I will go through the revised text, and then I'll ask at the end for any comments or questions that you have at the end of the presentation. We won't be brainstorming today, but of course, if you have any comments or questions, please bring them up at the end. And then once we go through everyone's comments or questions, I will ask that you will either vote to endorse the changes as proposed by staff, endorse the draft text with any proposed changes offered by you all, and, or not endorse the changes. And any changes fully endorsed by ZOC through vote will be captured in the Planning Commission public hearing staff report as recommendations by ZOC.
Of other, any recommendation we make or any one to accept?
Any ones that you want to accept.
Okay, what if we don't want to accept? How does that show up?
Yeah, what about input that's given that is separate from just an up or down vote?
Well, that'll also be
a standing issue.
So yeah,
all the ZOC votes will show up in the Planning Commission staff.
Yes. Okay, you can move to the next slide.
Well, I just had a question. When you said direct, help expand on direction. So you've had these meetings, you've gotten direction from TLUC. What does that mean? Does that mean did TLUC take votes?
They didn't take votes, but we had the discussion with the stakeholders, and we came to a general consensus, and TLUC offered direction on how we would move forward based off of that consensus from the during the special TLUC meetings.
Okay.
And that's what we based our draft text based off that consensus.
Okay.
And I would say that the final means there is going to be formal TLUC direction. So,
right. I heard we're going to get there, but we're not going back.
Yes, correct.
Right. Okay. Does everybody understand that? Okay.
So the first changes that were made were for section 10303 for non-conforming structures. We were advised to add clarifying language that non-conforming agricultural structures may be replaced or reconstructed if the degree of non-conformity is not increased. If it has the same footprint, floor area, and height as the original non-conforming structure, unless it's already in conformance with the zoning ordinance. If permits are obtained and replacement is completed within 2 years. And if the structure remains exclusively used for bona fide agricultural production, I'll go through all of the slides first and then ask for comments so you can go to the next. So for section 20401 and 20402, we did make revisions that were actually carried over from the prime agricultural soil SOAM that were deferred to this SOAM. We were directed to add clarifying language that for the principal subordinate and cluster subdivision options, land subject to an existing conservation or open space easement may be included in the originating tract, and that such easement land will not count towards additional density. In addition, language was also added that unit yield permitted within an existing easement will be honored if it's included within a cluster if it's included in a cluster subdivision. And then, of course, this additional language was both added to both of those 20401 for AR1 and 20402 for AR2. So the next revision, we were directed to update the use permissions for the use from a minor special exception approval to minor special exception approval. And that was in the following zoning districts, AR1, AR2, A10, A3, and GI. The next revision was a minor revision to the seasonal labor dormitory use specific standards, but we were directed to revise the minimum size of a seasonal labor dormitory from 200 square feet per seasonal laborer house to 100 square feet per seasonal laborer house. And this is this aligned with the minimum square footage that's required by federal code regulations. So for the guest farm or ranch use, we were advised to reinstate revised or reinstate the use from the revised 1993 Loudoun County zoning ordinance and create new use specific standards for the use. So this section 402.10 is actually a new section of the zoning ordinance. The two biggest takeaways were that the new standards had language to ensure that private parties and or temporary special events are not permitted in association with the use, and that language was created to ensure that the use must be located on site within agricultural operation. So the recreation use specific standards were revised because of concerns that they were too broad, because they ranged from sports courts and ball fields to higher intensity uses such as amusement parks and stadiums. So we were directed to create a new level of recreation, and we did so with outdoor and active recreation to better fit those less intensive recreation uses. With that, we reorganized the recreation use specific standards into three types of recreation: indoor recreation, outdoor active recreation, and major recreation. And we also reorganized a lot of the existing standards to better fit each of these different types of recreation levels. And we also expanded the permissible accessory use for all recreation uses from all recreation use types, and created a regulation that such accessory uses are permitted for up to 25% of the total size of the permitted recreation use. So for both the ag support uses with direct association with on-site agricultural activity and for standalone ag support uses, it's just a minor change for now. We'll probably go back as we work on further ag production and ag operations. So we'll be going back to these sections. But for now, we were directed to remove the equine uses from these agricultural support uses and create standalone use-specific standards. So that includes equestrian facility and livery stable. So they'll have their own expanded use specific standards that they're subject to. So for livery stable, it did have existing use specific standards, but since we pulled them out of the ag support uses, we expanded the existing standards. And to remain consistent with standards for livestock, we added a minimum requirement for the use to be 5 acres unless a conservation farm plan is approved, and also added the same minimum setback of 60 feet from all lot lines. Language was also added that the use must be maintained by the owner or lessee in case the land is being rented. And then similar to the livery stable uses, we expanded the use-specific standards by adding the similar language regarding the minimum lot size, the setbacks, and owner lease requirements. And we also moved the accessory uses from the use definition into the use-specific standards, and also added food sales as a permitted accessory use. We also added equestrian event permissions and standards that were added to make it clear that this use is permitted to host equestrian-related events. These standards include minimum acreage to host equestrian events, maximum daily attendees, hours of operation, and specific requirements for equestrian events that exceed the maximum daily attendees allowed. I guess I went through all this already. Go to the next slide. So for agricultural processing, a lot of the existing standards were actually consistent with the small business use specific standards. So those were either revised or removed and replaced with new standards. Similar to the equestrian uses, we added clarifying language that the use may be operated by an owner or lessee rather than the owner or operator. New production requirements were added to address requirements for structures used for New production requirements and addressing requirements were added for structures for agricultural processing. And then in addition, we've added cold storage as a permitted accessory use, and also new criteria that allows for more square footage for agricultural processing if you meet certain criteria. And that's more so to promote safety and building code. Go to the next slide. So for agritourism, we were directed to remove the use from the cultural tourism use and create its own use-specific standards. In doing that, we added language to clarify that this use is only permitted in direct association with an on-site agricultural operation. We created new standards for the number of vehicles allowed on a property at one time, and that's dependent on the lot area. We added language that the owner, operator, or leasee must maintain or operate the use to clarify that that the operators may be renting the land upon which the use is being conducted. We added the hours of operation consistent with hours directed by TLUC. Created new standards for the maximum occupancy allowed for all structures used for agritourism, and added criteria to promote safety for structures used for agritourism as an kind of like incentive to for increased occupancy. I think we can go to the next slide. And then lastly, there were several terms that we either made revisions to the existing definitions or added a few new definitions to be consistent with the draft revisions that we made. We also reinstated the guest farm or ranch use definition from the revised 1993 zoning ordinance. So we made revisions to these definitions and then also the terms on the next slide. But that is a really brief overview of the revisions. So I can move to comments and terms and questions.
And the red line text is in their packets.
Jeff?
High conforming structures. I guess there seems to be a large change into it for areas outside of the rural area. Dealing with, and that deals with the restoration and everything. These terms, reconstruction, replacement, that specifically are now limited to the agricultural structure, I think. And whereas before, I believe that was available countywide. It seems to me, and maybe I'm bringing out of context because I'm only taking the snippet of information, but I guess I need some information on that, because number one, I'm surprised there's something that affects countywide that's stuck in Walrus, but then maybe it's not. Maybe I'm reading it incorrectly.
So originally there was a section, it's actually at the bottom, it's crossed out now. It's for replace, repair, or reconstruction of these non-conforming structures. So we kind of just reorganized this section to hopefully make more sense, but then also add it in non-conforming agricultural structures. So a lot of the existing language is just, a lot of the language that's here was already in the zoning ordinance. It's just reorganized.
Right, but it seems to now be limited to agricultural. And whereas the struck language doesn't say only agricultural.
That's better. So under 10303B, the A and C were already existing. Nothing was taken out. The only thing that was added was that a legally established non-conforming agricultural structure may also be replaced or reconstructed. So A and B already encompassed the existing permissions. We didn't.
You mean one B, A, one C?
Yes, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. One, yes. B1A.
It says only the following types of non-conforming structures may be replaced.
Yes, and that's consistent with what was already in the zoning ordinance.
There's mobile homes, it says agricultural, and something other legally established non-conforming only damaged or destroyed by casualty.
Yes.
Okay. I think the language before used to say you could reclaim, quote, countywide. And I don't see this saying you can reconstruct countywide.
Just to be clear, when you say old, you mean 93 revised?
No,
Jim.
Top of Jim.
No, I'm talking about the current zoning ordinance. The struck language to me appears to say, and I'm calling it countywide, seems to be a statement that is applied throughout the entire county, now it's limited to this only area. And then there's limitations on how to do a reconstruction and a non-conforming structure. You don't need to necessarily answer. Maybe I just use the comment. I mean, that's where I'm coming from, and I can explain further. I don't want to monopolize it. But that's where my feeling is when I'm reading this. I'm seeing the word only, and that's drawing me down. Okay. And before, it didn't say that.
If it's, it was only those two, is that A and B?
You guys put the existing the mobile technical and manufacturer.
Oh. And then it was the two things that
I have in.
Yeah.
Can we put that up for you to put it up?
B2. I can do construction. That's where it talks about the degree of movement.
Well, Ryan, let's put it up so everybody can hear.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So if you scroll down a little bit, Stephanie. So here's all the strut language. And I think what Joe is concerned about is really this right here. One. A and B is what Dave is trying to say we've captured up here. And these are two types of structures that are then able to be reconstructed non-conforming. Okay, so this is your mobile or manufactured home. And the second one is that which is damaged or destroyed by casualty or event. If you scroll back up, one A and B are then captured here in A and C. What we've added is a structure, a legally established non-conforming agricultural structure. Okay, so those two have been added. Then further down in C and D of this that got struck, okay, we talk about what about the structure. Okay, so the degree of non-conformity is not increased in C, and D is the two-year clause. Okay, it has to be within 2 years of the destructive event. Okay, so then you can see if you scroll back up, C and D are captured a bit further. And okay, right here, B2, that's where it talks about, okay, how are you going to do this? What is going to be applicable? Replacement or reconstruction of non-conformity must be in accordance with, here you go, cannot increase the non-conformity. Talks about the same footprint, and then we get into that two-year clause. Okay, so that's where Dave is trying to say we haven't taken any of that out, really effectively added this. But the structure is different, so that's where we turn this off. And does this structure work, maintaining what was there, and then adding what we've been directed to add in?
Did reorganize the language just because once we started looking at it, we realized the existing text is just organized in such a way that it just doesn't make sense. You know, it talked about a use with standards, and then it provided standards at the bottom. So some of that we also reorganized just to make administration easier.
Nice. Look,
I know it's detailed and I understand what you've done. I think the reorganization is, it reads in a clearer way. But I say the main topic, replacement and reconstruction, first word is only the following types of non-conforming structures may be replaced or reconstructed. Legal established mobile home, legally established non-conforming agricultural structure, and any other legal non-conforming structure damaged or destroyed by a casualty or event beyond the owner's responsible control. And I don't think that same, I do not believe that same language was as limiting as before. I believe you could reconstruct a non-conforming structure in other areas besides those three limitations. I believe I could reconstruct a non-conforming structure in Ashburn. If it was now it says that I believe it's saying I can't do that because it's one. That sets the parameter. I know two says you can, might be able to read it to say you can do it, but one tells me I can't. That's what I think is happening.
So I'll be clear, existing today, if it's not a mobile or manufactured home and it was not damaged or destroyed by a casualty or event beyond the owner's reasonable control, It cannot be replaced, repaired, or reconstructed.
I would add, too, it has to be legally established.
And, yeah, so we clarified the legally established.
You're talking about historic stuff in Ashburn. You know, the old buildings existed prior to the zoning ordinance, so they're legally established. But if you build something without getting zoning permits and county approvals, no, you're not going to be allowed to rebuild it. I mean, that's the existing law.
I understand that. I'm not going there as much as I am. I believe this is limiting. Maybe I can put this on the list. Okay.
We'll take a further look.
Okay, sure. Thanks. I knew you would. I didn't think it was intent.
Since B is the new item added, can that be swapped with C? And so that it looks like it is the tertiary condition? Because it does look like that it, from what Joe's saying, the A and C were already there, but the insertion of B in between seems to also be a bit of a problem, because applying it to throughout the entire county. Does this just change in the order?
Look at that too. Sure.
We can definitely look at it. We understand what you're saying, so we will definitely look at it. We could spend all day wordsmithing.
Yeah.
I get it.
Click. Yes. I'm not sure which Ryan Reed I'm addressing to. Okay. Are there actually two Ryan?
No, that was a placeholder. I'll help you out.
All right. Under support uses, agricultural support uses, at item G, hazardous chemicals, pesticide use. I don't know if this is the question that's pertinent or not, but I don't see anything related to environmental issues such as smoke development. you know, that is also a hazardous chemical, such as burning coal. So where does that plug into the ordinance or the changes?
So that's actually existing language. I can definitely take that into consideration when we go back and revise that section, because we are considering revising it to fit agricultural operations. We're going to be working on section on development standards for agricultural operations. So we actually haven't changed that. That's existing language, but that'll probably come back up again. But I'll take that into consideration.
These two, yes.
We just start throwing out stuffs.
So, well, can we go from the top down?
That would be helpful.
Section by section, on the table.
Yeah.
Was that everything for 10303? You want to go to 20401 and 20402? Any comments?
I'd first like to thank Jason and company very much for the inclusion of language that will cover conservation easements that's supported by multiple land trusts.
It does literally say thank you for adding.
302 use tables.
What's 302? Sorry.
Sawmills.
Sawmills, yes. So is it... Do the minor specs, is that necessary for temporary sawmills that are portable? Okay, awesome. Thank you.
What was the answer to that?
Yeah.
No.
No.
This is a permanent stationary facility.
Okay. Awesome.
Sorry, can we go back up just a little bit?
Do you want to go to?
A little further up where it is talking about the conservation easement applies to principal subordinate subdivision option. And it's under K2, because it's a new concept and it was originally discussed for cluster subdivision, but it is also applies to principal subordinate. Could there be a parenthetical hyperlink to in A and H, K2A and K2H, referencing this new provision of 20401E? And I think it's just because it has been not known for that it would also apply to principal subordinate. So it's making a reference in that list of A through H that this new term applies.
Yeah, we'll definitely consider that. Having that, you said 2A and H.
A and H, and along with the cluster subdivision option section. It had been discussed throughout Zora a number of times to have standard HOA documents, standard template, other than developers just coming up with the standard template that would be in a suburban area. Has there been any progress in terms of identifying, because it says in homeowner association is required for any subdivision, do we have any sort of template in the works to be able to have for cluster subdivisions?
What we have right now is basically what we have for this issue, but I will look into working on that as well.
It was just one of the things that had been recommended throughout SOAR.
Because there are HOA templates that are agriculturally supportive and friendly. They do exist, especially in a lot of the base density subdivisions in Loudoun, so it would be good to.
And the reason was that the better the HOA document is at the front end, the less issues you have on the back end.
Yeah, getting
so it was for the benefit of the initial process and not have as much enforcement issues.
I think I would say you're talking solely about principal subordinate or also cluster?
No. Cluster. This is later on. This is under cluster subdivision.
Principal subordinate, I don't know that we actually see HOA documents.
No. I'm on the next section. I was on L.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. I go to 4206. Dormitory.
So this is probably more of a question at this point, because there was a lot of conversation about potential ways to make this work better, including a shared kitchen space and a shared sanitary space for bathrooms with smaller living spaces. Obviously none of that's reflected here. Is this a work in progress? Was that all said? Like, where is that in the process?
We are going to be revisiting farm labor housing at the last specialty luck meeting.
Okay.
We are going to be discussing that again.
Okay.
And then we will basically move from there.
Okay.
Because
100 square feet is reasonable if there is a shared space of reasonable height with sanitation and water running, and you know that we could have shared kitchen facilities. That's okay. But if that's not going to happen, then that's pretty small. And then, of course, there was a lot of conversation about temporary structures, allowing farm laborers to either live in, something they move on site. But we'd like more of those conversations to continue so we can try to find some more creative solutions.
And I will echo that. Thank you very much. And one of the things I would add in is, I don't know, and this is more of a process part, whether I don't think there is objections to the 100 square feet, but I do think that there are extenuating circumstances that will still be discussed in the miscellaneous kind of catch-up discussion. So it is up to the chair and the members of SOC on whether or not they want to put this forward, or if this would then come under or at all be modified during that miscellaneous catch-up discussion. It just seems a little out of sequence.
I mean, there's not much to vote to support or not support at this point, so
right.
That's kind of where I would reserve judgment until we see what happens with this section.
And I would echo that as well. So, Mr. Chair, that is a discussion that is, okay, you got it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
4210.
I have some comments on this one.
4210 or 6?
I mean, I don't think I have a lot of input on what's been added other than this is already happening as is right now, so I'm not really sure a new use was necessary. We have several board members of Farm Bureau doing this right now without the use being outlined, but, you know, we want to add it. Okay.
So I think there's three layers on lodging that we currently have within this type of use, one of which is short-term residential rentals, commercial whole house rentals that are not permitted. Food service and not permitted events. Then you have the B&B listings of lodging options, which do have the ability to do food service and events. This is a bit of a hybrid, Tia, on one line and one line only, which is that they can provide food.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, I think there are a couple of different paths if somebody wanted to get there. If they wanted to have events and food, they could go and get a B&B license. If they didn't want to have those, they could continue with the commercial whole house rental, which I think is what you're referring to, or short-term residential rentals. But this allows the ability for, the way that I read it, it's just that one small modification that they could provide home-cooked meals for guests that are there.
Okay.
So if I am reading that correctly, I think that is the differentiation.
Okay.
Well,
but I'm asking clarification.
I would add, like, when we, so initially we didn't understand what Guest Farm Ranch was because it was basically duplicative of the short-term rentals and bed and breakfast. But then in looking at the existing definition and kind of brainstorming amongst ourselves, we said, well, I mean, by its very nature, it's supposed to be taking place where there's agricultural activity going on.
Right.
So let's make it an exclusive type of B&B, basically, or short-term rental, is only available for agricultural operation. So by virtue of being located on the agricultural operation, you're going to get all the accessory uses that are exclusive to agricultural operation, too. So while this doesn't allow special events as part of the being, as part of the Guest Farm Ranch use, you're going to get agritourism activities, which are solely applicable to agricultural operations.
And they can have the events.
As agritourism events or whatever we call that. Food service is going to be another thing that there's going to be a special food service use that applies only to agricultural operations.
Okay.
So those are types of things that this will get. Short-term rental and B&B will not.
But it does have that little, it does have a bridge between those two uses.
Yeah.
And that is a difference because I think the people I know of doing it with, you know, on farm with farm-related activities as part of the stay, I do believe they're not serving food. So I think that
this gives some that ability without having to go through the process of applying for a B&B. Around intense use. But that's how I'm reading it. And I think if that's how I'm reading it, I will say that, I'm sorry.
Jason said yes.
Yes, that I would support that, but opening it for other discussions as well.
So would this also end up with, I know we pulled the B&B and lodgings later, but would this also have any of the dependency of a quantity of rooms rented?
That
potentially
yes and no.
So this would need to be a part of the discussion of lodging then, because it's a sort of a lodging.
Well,
I think that'll be something that we can definitely consider for this as well.
Because that gets to number five where it says that it's empty. It, you know, it's a TBD. Yeah. So without knowing number five. It says staff will draft this in the future. So we don't know how it applies in a cluster subdivision.
Okay.
So how it applies in a cluster subdivision is going to be extremely important for consistency for other uses that are also in a cluster subdivision. So it can't be looked at as isolation.
What I would say to that is, remember, this is solely going to apply to agricultural operations. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to establish an agricultural operation most likely on a regular cluster subdivision lot. It's going to be either on a rural economy lot or a
preservation. That's what I mean. Yeah. So it's all the permissions that go along with it need to be considered when these permissions are established.
Okay. Yeah.
But just for that one item, a cluster subdivision.
Yeah.
We had so much fun the first time in the prime sentence.
But I do want to thank the staff on coming up with that hybrid for this. I don't know how many people are going to use it. And I think that gets back to what Tia had mentioned, but having it as a viable option.
What I would say, and again, we're the drafting mode, so we can't promise anything, is, again, it's the difference between the private parties versus the agritourism activities. Half the private parties, you have to establish a B&B of a certain intensity, you know, you have the homestay in, then country in. Here, the size of your agritourism activity is dependent on the size of your agricultural operation, not the number of rooms that you're renting out. So if you're a small equivalent of a homestay, but you're on a farm of 300 acres, you're going to be able to have, at least how we're in point with it right now, the largest size private party. Without having to get those, you know, come in for the country in or whatever.
I think it's an interesting
solution.
And eventually it would be really, really helpful for business operators, even before they start, to see the full portfolio of all the different lodging options, because they wouldn't have to pick a B&B if they really don't want to do a B&B. They really want to do this. So
provided they located on an agricultural or something that
applies. Yes. If you are an agricultural operation, you don't have to have a faux B&B. Is that a word?
It's a thing for
sure. Everything?
OB&B, is that a new use too?
I would prefer not. But they do exist. They just aren't calling themselves that.
Did that cover 4 or 301?
I've got something on the bed and breakfast homestays that was trying to close the loophole that Laura's talking about.
Okay, so let's go 4 or 301.
That we took out the B&B uses.
That's not all gone. Okay.
Oh, that's not in this.
We'll be revisiting that.
I got you.
Got it.
Bringing that up.
I'd say we've got a lot of information on that.
In back.
And that's why I guess farm and ranch, we have to be part of that discussion. Just for inclusion.
Recreation?
Got a question.
Go ahead, Bill.
I see that there's use table updates for some of the other uses, but not for recreation. I just wanted to see how the major recreation was applied across other districts, not discussed in Walrus.
So major recreation, the use permission stayed the same. I still have not completed the use permissions for the outdoor recreation. The active recreation is actually not included in this. So we're actually going to come back with outdoor recreation at the next TLUC meeting. So this will be discussed further. This is just a clarification that we are separating the recreation uses based off the direction that it was too broad. So that will be coming back. I guess the next meeting is November 5th. This will be part of that discussion.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And I just wanted to confirmation, because it's not listed, indoor recreation is still not allowed in the rural area.
Those use permissions did not change as well.
I got the reference to major recreation not being included in AR is what kind of threw me off on it.
As it is right now, it is a special exception to the TCC, but yes, it's not permitted in the AR1, AR2, but yes.
And if I may ask further clarification on Jim's question, in your description when you were going through, you mentioned amusement parks and stadiums. That may have been as an example as you were talking about more intense use of recreation. Neither of those are allowed in the rural policy, is it?
No, those are, so that's, the problem with how it is now is like recreation just encompassed, like I said before, it was from a sports field all the way to middle. So
that's context, not saying.
Yes, that's context. So like the reason why we're further dividing it is so that those amusement park uses are in that major recreation, and then you're not subject to more so like the parking standards that I'll come back with next month are not the same for an amusement park as they are for a baseball field. Like just a baseball field, like not, it's a stadium, but that's the separation that we're going for with this.
Okay. Anything else recreational? Row 8 or 3?
Okay. Yeah.
And I do want to clarify that we will be coming back with these. It's kind of, I know it's counterintuitive, but the way that we're getting direction based off the different topics, like I said, we're going to be bringing some of these chapters back. And this is one of the chapters that we will be bringing back. The direction that we received so far was to pull out the equestrian uses out of these sections. So that's what is reflected here. Further revisions will be made to this section as well. But the direction that we've received was to pull that equine uses out, and that's what's reflected in both 40803 and 40804.
That's helpful context. I have just a general point, so I may not have to say it over and over again. Some folks who are looking at this, they say, well, wait a minute. You took away the noise requirements. And then I have to explain, no. It's in Chapter 7. And if there are use-specific standards, the Chapter 70503F will apply. And I get a blank stare from every single person I ever try to explain that to. So I don't know whether it's going to be worthwhile, but either it just needs to be handled differently, because there's people are not getting the fact that the lack of noise in the use specific standards, they don't get that it is covered by Chapter 7.
So just further clarification, maybe.
Yeah, because when you look at it, it has all the same things. And even exterior lighting, it makes reference to 7050C, you know, whatever. If you put in noise, complies with 70503F. I mean, that way the blank stares would be a whole lot less. And that goes for all of them. Sorry.
And I would offer that if we've got something that we know is going to come back with further revisions, that is somehow called out or marked, because there is a lot here.
I would appreciate that. Yeah. Next to me asking questions, that's the answer.
It creates some frustration with stakeholders when they see this and understand that things that they had talked about are not reflected. So if we are only approving or discussing the fact that equestrian was pulled out because that's a part of the next item, and then there was a change regarding hours of operation, but I think I would prefer to have all those conversations when you have more content.
Yeah. So is that 40802? Can we just do them both?
Yes.
All right.
Are you going to do standalone 80408-04?
That had the same changes, so it would be the same, I guess, the same discussion.
That's a will come back, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's still a question, and I know I raised it with Teresa, one of the Teresas, on the table 40804-1. For what it still lists agricultural education or research, when that has its own use-specific standard. So the issue is that there is at least one location where, let's see if I can find it. It's in the in table 40804-4. Scroll down. The FAR for the structures in this use-specific standard does not match what agricultural education and research says in 40503. It says it's 0.4 FAR. So that just needs to be looked at for consistency between the two.
Comments on I know we've only made a little bit of a change on the hours of operation. When we're talking about the port uses, if it's not a public facing operation, if we're literally just talking about, you know, ag employees showing up at certain hours to take care of horses or do whatever, I'm not really sure why we're talking about hours of operation. I agree with that. What on earth difference does it make if the three employees that work at Potomac Vegetable Farms come in an hour early because they need to get the order to a farmer?
And they turn on the lights.
Right.
Like, I think we've heard that concern. I mean, based off of the feedback that I've received for like the equestrian uses, about adding clarifying language that I guess this is different because this isn't, you're not having the public, but maybe adding clarifying language that this does not pertain to everyday workers coming to.
I'm talking to Dave, like I kind of, I don't know if you guys went to like amusement park or younger adult, like in Busch Gardens, you know, the gates are closed. Staff's back in the background doing all the work, getting set up. And then at 9 o'clock, the gate lifts and everybody like runs into that's kind of.
But that does create noise and light and things that people need to be aware of when teams do go in and start working. So I think that if we can just keep that open to confirming once all the other information comes through.
Yeah. Well, where I was going was I think trying to allow it's when the thing becomes open to the public is
right. The public facing aspect of it is where I absolutely understand we want to be careful about that. But yeah, and I'm thinking of the farms that are preparing things that are going to go to farmers markets, which often happens very, very early in the morning. Like, I don't really know why that needs to be restricted.
But also maintain the traffic.
Right.
Right.
Okay. 4, 8, and 6.
So as we go in here, I've got a process question. Because I know in the packet you have information that I know I put together, you have other information coming in. Does anybody have, I've got a similar matrix from LCEA. Has anybody received anything? County Equine Alliance.
They had already submitted. Yes. Kelly came last week and she submitted last night in an email and also last month.
Okay, so I have
it was the same.
I have her printouts. There was just something that was different that was discussed this past week. And so I just wanted to make sure that you have it or I can speak to it and pause. You guys can confirm whether or not that is what you have as well.
I have
no, and then fine. I have
you go first.
Okay. Yeah. And then I have the other ones from the stakeholder. So however you want to proceed.
Go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead. Who wants to go first?
Go for it.
All right. So under subdivisions. On one side, we've got information that came from LCEA that noted, as did the other stakeholders, that this was not discussed during the TLUC meeting, but then they also added in prime soils on PFL should be utilized for agriculture with no permanent structures. So LCEA has added that additional information.
Which one is this under? E. Okay.
It doesn't get that specific, but I wanted to share that from LCBA for consideration, however that goes.
There are quite a few uses that are permitted on preservation farm lots that were not agreed to during the prime soils debate. In fact, explicitly said no by the one side and never came to some kind of agreement, but they've magically showed up in this as permitted on preservation farm lots, specifically uses that either cover or do not use the soils. We have a lot of questions about how that happened, and I was going to submit it for the next quick fix one, but this falls into that category.
Thank you for that clarification.
Can you do that with the bring back? Just explain that prime use of the.
Yeah, I think that's a distinct language. So I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's kind of our point. Like, existing language was not agreed to during
the prime soil. Okay. Yeah.
Anything that's going to cover them that kind of makes the entire effort pointless.
Right.
So.
And then going down under accessory uses. Accessory uses are not listed for livery, but are included in the definition. Should it be included within the verbiage for 4.08.06. That's a question.
Yeah, we can definitely.
I think that'd be less confusing.
Yes, definitely.
I agree.
I will tell you regarding site size, there does not appear to be support for that. Both noted this was not discussed during the TLUC meeting and have negative consequences on the industry. And then there are multiple reasons given within the matrix. The recommendation is to delete the language.
So delete all of the 5.
E1 and 2? No reason?
I'm definitely aware of number 2, that the 2 acres per horse was not going to be sufficient because there'll be a lot of horses hungry. But I don't recall that they struck everything from 1.
Trying to figure out what the comment is. You want to delete 2?
I think that the discussion.
Change the 5 acres in 1?
Well, let's start with delete 2. Let's just start with that. Everybody is in agreement with that. Regarding what I'm seeing on my list, I'm not speaking for everybody around the table.
Okay.
Well,
I spoke with Chris Van Flack about number two, and it was based off a recommendation from the Land and Soil Conservation District that 2 acres of pasture per farm unit for open grazing is recommended. That's where that came from.
I think you're going to have a conflict between the Equine Alliance and the soil experts in this case, because a lot of farms, you've got animals that don't graze that are in there for a short, intensive period of time for training and then leave. And I think that's where you're going to clash heads between the two. I don't know if there's a way to write a standard for that, but that is probably where you're going to have that problem.
Right. The statement here is horses are rarely on pasture 24/7. And if they are, they generally don't rely on pasture grass as the sole source of nutrition.
For number one, I do think it requires a deeper discussion along with the conservation farm management plan issues and cluster subdivisions. So, I wouldn't go strike it yet.
Just
that's fair.
Supporting what Tia said, there is it's not just about the grasses, but also the intensity of the.
Yeah.
The stocking makes a difference relative to.
And the nature of the barn in question, unfortunately, and I don't know how to necessarily parse that out in an ordinance, but we do have operations that do very, very different things.
Exactly.
So I support keeping number one in for further discussion and clarification. Number two, because as I go through the notes, number two seems to be on this. So number two recommendation would be to delete the language.
There's some language that could help to clarify that you're trying to conserve the land while allowing for different approaches. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know enough to that.
A very quick conversation with Kelly and Chris would be able to resolve.
Yeah, yes. That's what I would say.
All right, so that comes back 4-8-6.
Under the owner, both sets supported that.
Mm-hmm.
So F was supported. G, LCEA voiced concerns about consistency across uses.
That's the same note that I have too.
And the other stakeholders did as well.
Yeah. Well, the main thing was that consistently LCEA for 4 years said that they should have the same standard as Virginia ABC uses. So if Virginia ABC uses have 60 feet, then they should be 60 feet, not less. So the consistency, as long as it remains across other uses, it shouldn't be in the silo of equestrian. It should be across any sort of solar intensity use.
I'll just chime in. I believe, and Dave can correct me, I believe any agricultural structure that houses livestock is 60 feet.
That is correct.
Right. So the consistency here was that they were being held to a higher standard at one point. This is actually probably going to be more agreed to.
So I think it's just, that was the caution saying they want to make sure consistency between uses. Under H, road access, stakeholders supported. Under exterior lighting, there is a lot of discussion.
There is a lot of comments on that.
And
was that on a horse next to a 12-foot light?
There's not a lot of support.
Yeah.
And
you're going to have a light in your eyes.
Yeah, well, during TLOC, there was a call for consistent rural lighting.
Right.
And there was 8-foot pole proposed, which was obviously not.
I'd be okay. I'd
drive horses. I'd be more than 8 feet tall.
Not going over.
So, I mean, there are existing allowances for 15 feet, and that's why we settled at 12 feet. This is, I'm here to hear feedback about that.
So the feedback that we have received is that from one set of stakeholders, a minimum of 20 feet and maybe a maximum of 35 feet.
That's where I put it too. Yeah. And again, you're talking about an outdoor arena that's going to be used for maybe an hour or two at night and then shut off. So we're not really talking about something that's going to be, it's not going to be left on all night. This is not a situation where we're dealing with, you know, like the stadium lights at the high school are often on all night, even right. If anyone's there or not, or until 11 o'clock at night.
So you're talking about an outdoor, specific outdoor arena standard that we could put in there.
Yes.
Separate from a rural lighting standard that's across the board.
Right. I write draft forces. So I'm
10 feet in the air when I'm sitting on that. So yeah, like you can't have a 12-foot
light hatch.
Yeah.
And then we could have a specific time when those outdoor arena lights are off. That's specific to that.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. And I think that I'm going to ask.
Right. Arena, the correct term.
I don't know if arena is correct, because if you are moving from, if you were on the horse moving from a stable or a stall to get to the arena, I don't know if we want to say.
More often than not, arena. It's kind of a pathway in between that's lit between a combination of the arena being on and the barn lights reflecting at you. Yeah. There's not usually specific lighting for the pathway in between.
And that's fine, but I just wanted to make sure, because the term arena is,
exterior riding area.
Exterior riding area, I think, would be
maybe smart. Ask Kelly for how to term that.
But that was a good one. Everybody just went, what?
Geez. Yeah. We're all like, wait.
I'll wait for you to catch up. Am I good?
Good.
Okay. So under applicability, everybody wanted to say that thank you very much to staff for pulling out the equestrian event facility and giving it its own use standard. So I just want to make sure you heard that positive information. Under B.
That one back.
Under B, there is a recommendation using the new standards numbering for each and eliminating the matrix sections B, C, and D1 under equestrian event.
Strasse. Under B.
Direct association with on-site agricultural activity. It says recommend using the new standard numbering for each and eliminating the matrix sections B, C, and D1 under equestrian events.
Struck.
All right.
But the words you're saying aren't up there.
Again, right. We would take issue with D2 preservation farm lots. This is not something that should be on a preservation farm lot. Rural economy, absolutely, but preservation farm, no.
Question about that. So one of the things that I don't know if we discussed internally as staff is certainly you don't want permanent, residences on a reservation farm lot, something that once you go residential, you're not.
Well, I mean.
So I guess our question is, though, say you don't have like a farmer immediately available. You do have somebody who wants to have horses. We're thinking, well, all they do is put up a barn. Horses running around in a field, soil at least is still, the area of soil is still not being used for development. And at some point.
But if you're putting up a multiple thousand foot barn over the soils, it really isn't functionally any different. It's a concrete base. It's not really functionally any different than putting a house over it. It's soil.
But it would also only be one barn.
I also.
Like a subdivision. So that was kind of like our questioning. But if you don't want it, we take it out. That's fine, too.
No, I don't think it's appropriate.
What you described is not what an event facility is. When you were talking about 200 attendees, 250 attendees, that's not exactly what you're talking about.
It's sort of a large facility.
Parking is a big facility. Okay. So it's the word event that makes the difference for this one.
I also don't think there's going to be any issue with finding somebody who wants to build a house and farm on preservation farm lots. I will tell you, somebody who watches Western Latham real estate very, very closely, something like that does not sit.
Okay.
Under accessory uses, the support is there, and also noted, thank you for accessory food sales. That was a really great input, so we appreciate that. Under site size, no issues with 25 acres.
Agreed. Now, I had a question about the owner or leasee of the lands. What was the thinking behind saying someone has to live at a facility like this?
There's no requirement to live out the property. Just to own.
You're saying either an owner or a renter. There's nobody else to cover.
Right. When I think at that discussion about leasee, which has been used on, well, you'll see on a lot of other uses, whether or not that could be added.
Yeah, that's what it was, Atticus. The original, it used to say owner or operator, and the concern was that maybe somebody's...
Or they get the land. Perfect. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Size of use. I have a request for additional information on H. You have LCEA supports the language that is there. And then there was a request for additional information from other stakeholders. So that I might be able to have that conversation here and see if anybody has any information on that. I think it's talking about the underlying zoning district.
About H.
Mm-hmm. As part of what the Planning Commission had already changed for size of structures in rural areas.
It's one of the only things that was touched during the...
It was. Or, the only thing that they basically did adapt.
The previous regulations of farming. It's not realistic.
Okay, so can you give me that one bullet more open, sorry, so I can just make a quick note.
There were already revisions made to size of size of ag structures during the Planning Commission in 2023. Yeah.
In 2023.
Yeah.
Okay. That could answer. It was just provide additional information was the request.
Right, and it's in one of the tables that we already have, and then they increased it to the 36,000 square feet, I think.
Thank you. Under L, that consistency discussion we've already had. No noted issues on road access. Exterior lighting, you've already heard. I think that comes into effect very much here. But there are two different things that are going to be discussed, which is the parking area. So this could be language the way that it might be. Where it says exterior lighting that is located outside of the parking area has your maximum of 35 feet. That might be a way to look at the discussion we had on the previous item regarding.
I think I'd say parking areas, lighting, safety areas.
Yeah. Is that video okay on
I think it's better to have it specific to where the horses are being
ridden. It may be better to specify.
Right.
Yeah. And that might be the way to do this. Yeah.
Exterior lighting. Or maybe just like a sub under that.
Specifically for arenas. I thought what you guys had talked about earlier was appropriate.
A lot of vehicles are over 12 feet tall. Horse trailers, trucks. Be consistent with bridge height. 12.6.
Well, if you're laying in the edge of a parking area, it doesn't really matter if it's taller or going under it.
So
is that totally clear to you?
I would say so. Where is it?
No, I take another number.
On the next one, L, maximum number of attendees. There is not support from LCEA or stakeholders.
For this formula.
For the 200 attendees plus two extra attendees per each acre over 25 acres as shown in the table.
Right. So what's their support for?
So consider changing attendees to vehicles and for properties greater than 100 acres remove restrictions.
My comment is a little bit more general and that for because this is events, and that events are going to be discussed for B&B lodging and for Virginia ABC uses, that you look at events more holistically so that it doesn't change in formula so drastically between different types of uses. Because from the adjacent parcel standpoint, the quantity of attendees versus the quantity of cars, it doesn't matter if it's an equestrian event, it's a wedding, it's a Virginia ABC, whatever. It's so the consistency so that the adjacent use knows what to expect for volume. So looking at events and then applying it to the various uses consistently.
Well, just along those lines, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, though. So this is the standalone equestrian event facility, like your Morven Park. type thing, and maybe there's one or two other examples. I think, though, that, you know, there is going to be overlap again with the agricultural operation, and your ability to certain horse farms are going to be able to take advantage of agritourism events. And so, you know, where I'm going is to what you're saying, there is going to be consistency because there's one set of agritourism event standards that's going to apply across the board. But then once you're exceeding that or can't qualify for an agricultural operation, like all you want to do is have horse events, equestrian events, this is the route you go. So I don't, might be appropriate to have different standards for this type of facility.
And then, well, especially when you're looking at, as an example, it says for a site like Morven Park with 1,000 acres, this would equal to 2,150 spectators, where their events can and should bring in 20,000 spectators. So that's where the issue is. So when you're looking at international events and they've got the space for it, 20,000, it's 10% of what they're actually going to be bringing. So the discussion coming back in is that these are too restrictive and too. So that additional information, Jason, is in the, and I'm happy to give that to you just from that standpoint. But as you guys look at it, we've got it from. And however, if it's discussion that would go with other uses on events, I think that those are going to be, you've got some big event spaces that need to have that flexibility or that ability, not flexibility.
I agree with what you just said. That, I would also say on the other side of it, however, 25 acres is a very small parcel to park horse trailers and trucks for 25 attendees. That's insane.
Yeah.
If I lived next door to that, I would lose my mind.
Yeah.
My neighbors across the street have 70 acres, and if they had 200 attendees at a regular event at their barn, it would make the neighborhood unlivable. And that's 70 acres.
So I think that you've got some feedback from the table. You've got some feedback from the stakeholders. I think there's more work to be done on this, but if there can be just a flag on how that would be handled.
Yeah.
I think that would be helpful.
And I think we've got some good facilities to look at. Like there's a really nice polo facility on Alder School Road that is right in the middle of this size-wise. You know, you can look at, I think we have good examples of the number of attendees and trailers that are coming. And in that one, you've got spectators and people coming to bring horses. So it's a good combination of people on site.
But Jason, your thought process is on target, that you have a base first and that you're doing the, for lack of a better word, overlay of what would exceed by use. And that can't be done in isolation use by use. This is what we're saying, that we need to be looking at it across a variety of them. But you're on the right track.
Well, I think it's going to depend, right? So I think we're going to be taking a look at this. I think that we've accomplished at least what the stakeholders probably wanted on flagging this. But then I think that I'm hearing it, there's going to be more discussion.
Right. Please come back.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Under, and well, I'm coming down here pretty quickly. So,
letters.
Yeah, add letters. Under M, there was discussion, and I think you've already handled that, which is should there be a distinction between the actual active event hours versus care and preparation of the athlete? So, I think you've already talked about that in other ag uses. And then under equestrian events exceeding maximum daily event attendees, LCEA would like to understand the approval process and associated cost charge for permits to exceed maximum daily events.
So this is similar to how the bed and breakfast operate now.
Exactly.
I understand.
So that's that consistency. I don't know what the cost of that permit is at this time, but that's where this consistency came from.
So you just want more clear.
They are not saying, yeah, exactly. Nobody is saying that they are approving it or fighting it. They just want additional information.
How do you get it done?
Is that permit cost still listed in Code Plus under the listing of all the permits for everything?
Yeah, that should be, yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I'll just say the noise comment.
Okay. And then under definitions.
Got a few other comments.
Are we done with this though?
Yeah.
There's
I don't know.
From my standpoint, there may be others.
Yeah, so this is, we have 40812.
Yeah.
First. Anybody have anything on that?
I mean, I got nothing but stuff on that. Yes. I didn't even know where to start with it.
My first is a question on A. Why is 1, 2, and 3 there when those are processing, and those are not processing uses, they're manufacturing? Are they only for information? Why are they there?
That's, I mean, yes, it's in information. It can be, we can consider removing it if it's unnecessary to.
Because it, when you see it there, it would first blush to somebody who's brand new. They're going to say, oh, so it's ag processing, but it's actually not. It's manufacturing with their own uses.
Right. What this is saying is those uses are not subject to the ag processing requirements. So if someone did go to ag processing for a limited brewery, they'd say, oh, I'm actually subject to 4.0805.
Okay, so it's there for clarity. That's what it was for.
Unless otherwise noted.
Yeah.
That was, I asked why I was here, and I said for clarity, yes.
What I would say to that, though, too, is like the distinction between processing and manufacturing has gotten really blurred.
Not from the Static Code of Virginia.
Yeah. That's true.
I'm not aware. Is there a definition?
The licensing is called manufacturing.
Yeah, but I...
The time.
Yeah, it's certainly intended to call those out. I think our concern is that we are also hearing arguments from ABC uses that they are processing. And I mean,
farm wineries, I would agree, are doing processing of product grown on the land right there. Breweries, no, it's called manufacturing, and for the most part, they don't purchase local ingredients or process the thing they've grown. So I would say it's manufacturing for sure. Those distilleries, I don't know yet. I don't know where I put that.
England Spring, are they processing or manufacturing?
Nope, they're processing.
Well, see, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
We can't.
But that's a one-off, maybe a two-off.
Yeah. So that's why we're just saying, like, regardless of what they are subject to this other stuff.
Okay.
It's clarification.
So okay. It's clarification. Yeah. Yeah,
clarification. Okay, got it.
I'm going to let Tia take the because we discussed this a little bit last
year.
Yeah.
Where are you going? Well, okay. Let me get my next thread.
Okay. I just want to clarify.
So going down, I do have a question because it's included in both places. C1B, what is that addressing? Just curious.
I think the concern was that some of these structures don't have that's more for a safety requirement, is that when fire truck needs to go to one of these structures, they don't know which structure, because usually a property might only have one structure addressed. I think the concern there was not knowing where to go. If somebody has an emergency in one of these agricultural processing structures, then that will offer clarification for the emergency to go to that specific structure. That's what that is for safety.
Okay.
And what else I would say, too, is, again, sorry, my memory is a little hazy. I know we talked about you have your agricultural operation and a certain scale of processing is allowed on those. Then you also have, could be bona fide agriculture uses, but because you're not in an agricultural district, you can't get an agricultural operation use. But, you know, if I'm have a bona fide agricultural operation, I'm located in TR, I could still have processing, but that's going to be more like the stuff you're doing in your garage. You're not going to have. How we set this up was, so if you're an agricultural operation, you have agricultural processing. A lot of it's based on what we saw at Potomac Vegetable Farms, and some of the ideas we heard were, you know, while I'm not using my facilities, there may be smaller farmers out there that want to come in and use my facilities for various things. So you're basically inviting in members of the public. And so once you start doing that, I mean, if you're solely the only person that's processing on your property is you, we're not so worried about addressing your, you know, your garage for that. But once you start inviting in outside people, that your scope starts going beyond what you're doing for yourself, that's when we need addresses for fire and rescue.
So what's the objection, I guess?
No, there is an objection. I don't know why it was added here, because I've never seen that added in any of the other sections. So I was curious why that was a question, not an objection.
Are you going to touch on A?
Can I say one thing on the addressing?
If you'd like to go first, go for it.
when I first read this, I was confused. And so, which must be addressed, says to me is saying you have something to address.
It is.
So must obtain an address.
Yeah.
Sure. Was clearer to me.
Must have a physical address.
I mean, I think A is an improvement over where we were, for sure. And this is the with on-site agriculture, so the 25% is definitely an improvement. Neighboring and abutting counties is definitely the language that was discussed during the stakeholder meeting to talk about rough years and when the yield is bad, being able to purchase and process product from neighboring counties. I thought that was good. Do you have other thoughts on
that? Just the word may versus must. So I would recommend products used for processing and or operation may be derived from on-site agricultural operation uses and or agricultural operations uses within an abutting county or even within multiple parcels within Loudoun County.
That's the biggest thing.
What
are we talking about? Okay, so A, you talk about using within a budding county, which is great. We do have partnerships, especially in rough years. But yes, multiple parcels within Loudoun County should be added to that.
Yeah. And I would change the word must to may.
Right. Absolutely. So at least 25% used for processing must be derived from on-site
agricultural operation, which is a big, good change from where we were.
Or at least 75% of products used for processing and or preparation must be
may be derived from on-site agricultural operation uses and or other agricultural operation uses within an abutting county. That's the point at which I would say within Loudoun County or an abutting county
and or
an abutting county.
It
seems like it was just kind of an oversight and a purposeful.
I totally agree.
But I'm questioning, is that supposed to be or at least, or is it and at least?
Okay, where's the at least?
I think it's supposed to be and at least.
Multiple operation uses.
Yeah. The point maybe it was supposed to be and.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be a typo too.
That first must needs to stay in the
mind. Does that apply to the second one too?
First must would need to stay
up. We didn't. The first must, I wasn't trying to do anything.
It's the second must. One must be derived from on-site agricultural operations uses.
I think if it's an and at least, the second one is supposed to be a must also.
Must is a very prescriptive may.
And I apologize for getting into wordsmithing, which you said not to do.
Yeah. But that's a big must.
But it is important to make sure that Loudoun County
is
added to that.
I think the adding of Loudoun County takes care of the must versus may.
Yeah, I agree. Where did the 2,500 square feet come from?
Yeah.
Approximate size of Potomac vegetable farms and also talking to Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen?
Legislating.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that too small to you? Or is that just a question?
I just, especially because it says aggregate versus single facility, I just didn't want to limit what was possible to put up on a large operation like PVF.
That's where you get down to two. You can increase it, but we want to start seeing larger structures. We want to start seeing some safety stuff.
So I always go back to 2,500 feet. That's about the half the size of a Chick-fil-A. So is that big enough? That's how I always think about it. But I would like to compliment the language in C2 that even a supervisor, TLAC chair, Crony, this is a really big hot button for her with protections for structures. But the only question is that, is this type of language going to be consistently used throughout going forward? Because this makes the structures for, pardon my French, dead animals and crops more robust than some of the ag structures that have people in them.
Yeah, that was my note on this. There's nothing wrong with this standard.
No, I'd like
people to be safe, but why are we only applying this to pure agricultural operations and not any agritourism operation? Why is the standard applied?
And my question is, will it apply forward? Because this is complementary here,
but not only for dead animals and crops.
So I think agritourism actually is the next section, and we do apply that standards as well there. So we will be considering how this could apply to other uses. So it's not
solely.
The other thing I would make a note of, if the 2,500 square feet, again, a lot of these operations, you're not coming in with a bunch of money to build your own 2,500 square foot facility exactly. You are dealing with an old barn that you now have to change around. So is it possible to make an allowance for an existing structure that might be bigger than that, that is what you're going to do with it? Because that is an issue. You're not really going to be putting a budget into adjusting an existing structure. You're just going to be buying a property and using it. Then the cold storage is too small.
Yeah, I think at least Jason and I have talked about considering having up to 100% of the 2,500 square feet being able for cold storage.
Okay.
Very ill, and you thought that was reasonable.
And that would limit to the 2,500 square feet you would be able to have cold storage. And that also, again, not limiting what those we're not trying to limit what is in that cold storage.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to
limit that.
No, because there was discussion about a lot of different uses going into that cold storage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I mean, we understand that there's going to be some sharing of space and crops are seasonal, and some people see things at different times of year. But we also, part of our concern here and limiting it, well, I mean, you can go up to 10,000 square feet of cold storage if you, again, meet these other standards. We also don't want somebody to come up with the idea of, well, why don't I just establish basically one of those like storage unit uses on my property and exclusively just rent out cold storage to people.
You mean the thing we've been asking the county to do for like a decade?
Well, it's okay if the county does. But so that's what, because I think in that case, while, you know, it might be a use we could permit on the property, I think you're starting to fall outside of ag and you're more commercial use.
Well, I mean, it's an aggregation facility, so it was used and it was
utilized on something else. I have a problem with the 2,500 square feet because my cellar floor is more than 2,500 square feet. My dairy barns, more than 2,500 square feet.
Well, so my animal barns are attached to a garage, which is attached to another garage structure. It is all one structure, and it absolutely exceeds 2,500 square feet.
Yes.
But, you know, it was built in the 50s, and I certainly don't have the budget to adjust it. So
that way we can look into ways to accommodate the existing structures.
Yeah, the existing structures is a big deal.
And 2,500 square feet is pretty small for a winery.
Seems arbitrary.
You said for a winery?
Yeah. Well, the wineries would not be.
Wineries
are going to be set.
Not processing.
What about the dairy barn?
Dairy barn, yeah. The dairy barn's more than 2,500 square feet. Historic dairy
barn. Dairy barn.
Yeah, that's
it's built as a dairy barn, and it right now it's a storage unit.
So that's
it. It could be used for something else.
Keep milk on.
You say a storage unit. What do you mean?
Well, we don't milk cows anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it's got stuff in it. And
that's not ag. That's not ag processing. That's farm structure.
But that's still pretty small, I think.
I would love the opportunity for us to get some feedback, because I've not had a chance to send it out to stakeholders.
Okay, sure. I would say, too, and you also ran that by Chris Van Black, and you thought 2,500 were efficient.
If you just want to see language for existing structures, I would just want to see language that accommodates existing barns you're trying to work with.
And the other point Chris Van Black made was on, you know, there's certain, we want to make sure that it excludes certain kinds of storage, because what do you say, like certain grains, maybe even like hay, you know, you have to put that in like a special silo that has fans and heaters in it if you harvest it wet.
Fire.
Just make sure that that's not processing, that that's considered separate storage.
But
that's what I'm saying, is like people are starting to blend that. Yeah, you didn't consider that as part of processing, but
I have a question for you three. I think at the beginning of the last meeting in public comment,
I'm not sure her name, but there was a lady that someone said may have been associated with Mom's Apple Pie.
Avis Renshaw.
Avis Renshaw.
Is this area where she was concerned, the comments she was making? I just want to make sure those comments are being addressed. And
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I've got her comments in my spreadsheet.
Okay. So whenever
that's our bureau.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You want your pies to go away? Next.
Keep going. The standalone. The minutes. With the onsite aggregate. Hang on, sorry. Go back up. Without onsite agriculture, I cannot talk today. Okay, so this is without the on-site agricultural component, correct? This is the standalone? Okay.
This is without the agricultural operation. So you could still be bona fide agriculture if you're just outside of a zoning district where you can establish an agricultural operation. So it's going to be like TR, JLMA, large lot TR, large lot JLMA, possibly some CRs.
Okay.
I might be missing a few there, sorry.
But is this also what Wedmeyer was talking about?
Well, so he probably has an on-site agricultural operation. What do you mean by what he was
in talking? In terms of, I'll hold.
So what number are we on?
On this one, to that reference, if, just to be sure I'm understanding, Tyler, for example, has his own place with his own operation, and he also has operations elsewhere. This doesn't count. Doesn't apply to him.
It's like Chris's operation, where Chris's processing is on a 2-acre parcel he owns with a barn, which is where he does processing of his grains. But that's just 2 acres. And then all of his leased parcels are where his product comes from.
Right. So that, thank you for
that. That's my concern with, and we're going to see more of that style of operation going forward into the future, not less. So we have to make sure that we're accounting for it.
And that's kind of what Mike Meyer was talking about.
Yes. Well.
Thank you for that clarification.
Because Paris leases from us at PEC, and they have other properties. And I think they have some properties in Clark.
Yeah,
that's right. Different property. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm we'll just leave that. There's some other stuff we need to sort out, but sure, yeah, we can.
We just need to make sure that we're accounting for young farmers, because we have more of them than any other county in Virginia that are going to be leasing a lot of parcels and using one somewhere to do their processing, but
getting.
So again, part of that discussion is you do have the ag processing. That's part of the agricultural operation, which is your rural agricultural zoning districts. So A3, A10, ARs, possibly expand that to one or two other things like, PDRV conservancy lots or something like that. I don't know.
So how do you capture that?
I think where my...
See, this is different. This is what's going on JLM.
So I think the part that we're concerned about is C.
You want Chris and others going to these parcels in transition areas and outside of towns to do processing. I mean, we're open for discussion.
If this is meant for transition, then it should be parenthetically on there that's what it's for.
Yeah, I agree.
Because for our farm, we have one farm, but it's 3 parcels. So if we had all the processing of the corn, but on the one parcel that's smaller, would you consider that, if you look at it again, not the on-site ag?
Like C is Chris's operation. Like that is tough. Where he does his processing is less than 5 acres, and he's not alone in that. So, and again, if he had purchased a home just outside of Percival, say, and had 2 acres just outside Percival, no, I wouldn't care at all that that's where he was doing his processing. I'd be happy he was doing processing. So that answers that question, maybe. I don't really mind.
I think we need to discuss it further.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. And perhaps get some additional feedback.
And if we want to get into the specific, if your worry with
ag processing in the JMLA is if we're talking about animal ag processing versus grains or something like that. I'm not, okay, we can have that discussion too.
Is there a third category of ag processing? I can't remember.
That, well, the last one was that they're just subject to, that's, I misspoke earlier. The third one is where they're subject to the ag support uses because it doesn't have that on-site agricultural operation.
Right.
But that's what the third one is. So that's going to be subject to those 4.04.
So I know we've gone around this a long time, and one thing that we did a long time ago was to just jot down a decision tree, and the decision tree of all the if, ands, or buts helped determine what the regulations should be to make sure they were all being covered. So I can even go back and see if I can find that original one. We could just revise it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That section. If we could, but I would like that conversation to continue because it's definitely happens a lot of trouble.
I'd like to get some.
Agritourism.
So I got confused. This is instead of, it's removing agritainment, correct?
It's combined. It's, so it's pulling, yes, agritainment and agritourism out of cultural tourism, and it's combining those two. And it's going to be agritourism.
I would prefer we not tackle this in the next 15 minutes, if we could.
That's fine. Okay.
I'm fine with it.
Was there anything you want to give staff like any thoughts?
No, I'd like it's to just, push it forward for another conversation.
I'm okay with that.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot there.
Same with definitions. Or can we get definitions done?
There was, I only had a few notes on
definitions. Yeah, I didn't have a lot of notes on it.
Go ahead.
Okay, already the comment asking about verbiage in 4.08.03. Under agricultural support uses, direct association with on-site agricultural operation activity. Please note there is discussion between stakeholders regarding if polo and fox chasing should be called out as individual uses with no clear determination. And then there's a question, are fox chasing kennels and inclusion as allowed for use on these facilities?
So I think those uses could be encompassed within the equestrian uses and the kennel uses. We could also add clarifying language that equestrian uses do include kennels for boarding foxhounds. So to clarify that, I don't know if it would make sense to have a new use for fox chasing, but I think it could be clarified in the existing uses. I mean, there are existing uses that would encompass. You can't have an equestrian, you can't have a stable, and you can't have a kennel. You can establish those on the same property.
There's a suggestion. May I read that to you?
Yeah.
Okay. It says, and this is from LCEA, we propose that hunt stables are private stables that do not provide stabling for more than 10 non-hunt owned horses, and the horses are not for hire. Staff generally cares for and lives on the premises. Foxhound kennels and private kennels with indoor sleeping and outdoor exercise areas for hounds on the stable property. They appear to be a good fit for the kennel standard 4.04.16.
Yeah, I think it's, I have that.
Right. And that's been submitted.
Yes.
Right. That's been submitted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
What else for definitions?
Outdoor recreation outdoor. It says rentals. So can that word be clarified for equipment rentals versus lodging rentals?
Yes.
Yep.
Good catch.
Also, when active and outdoor.
Yeah, I think I saw it somewhere else too.
Anything else?
I've got.
All right, so this comes back next time. Mike, yep. Do we have time for a quick question?
Of course.
Okay, going back to dormitories, we have doubled the size or the occupancy of the dorm buildings. And what are we trying to achieve there? It looks like a 2,500 square foot dorm would hold 20 people, according to my rudimentary calculation. Are you limiting, or can you have multiple tenant buildings, dormitory buildings? And if so, it's going to look like a manufactured housing location. So what is the current use of dormitories in terms of migrant workers? Do we have that?
So the current existing regulation was a 200 square feet, and it is down to 100 square feet, and that is just in, that's consistent with the federal code regulations for 100 square feet.
Right.
So that's where that number's coming.
Okay.
But
so 2,500 square foot building gives you about 20 people. So is that what your goal is to have a building for 20 people? And then how many buildings can you have?
They're done by special exception.
Yeah.
So that's what you said, they want to be able to.
Okay. Limit. And that solves that. Okay. Thank you.
I believe they're done by special exception. Correct.
And what I would say, too, related to the seasonal, I know it's a topic for another day, but we're looking into Stephen's suggestion. I mean, it's not going to be his, you know, utopian agrarian campground concept, but trying to achieve that, there is a health department use called migrant labor camps. We don't like the name, people don't like the name, but it is something that is happening in Loudoun County. We need to incorporate that into the zoning ordinance, and we're looking at ways to combine that and tenant dwellings, which, you know, to something that isn't quite as intensive as an actual dormitory, but can be used to provide year-round.
And Jason, that housing. Will fall outside of any discussion on campgrounds, because he had also brought in a campground as an option with,
I think,
co-located toilets, yeah, and shower facilities.
That's what I was talking about earlier, right. Like having minimal permanent structure, which then obviously brings with it minimal expense for the farm in question, and then people can come in their own structures.
So that's where I think we're going to come back with that at the last meeting.
Okay.
And I think that he's going to come in. You guys are going to have the opportunity to speak with him before him.
I was going to say, are you reaching out again to Stephen?
Once we get to that DLUC meeting, we'll rehash these ideas.
Awesome. Because he had some interesting ideas.
Yes,
he always does.
Who's going to spend $500,000 for a 2,500 square foot structure anyway?
I mean, what's really being talked about is lots of small structures with a shared space that is more affordable. But it's, you know, putting vegetable farms, it's just a few farms that are truly using that amount of seasonal labor.
And they're not looking to use those for any other purpose when they're not.
Right.
They don't become a short-term rental.
Yeah, no, there's no. They're just trying to figure out how to house the workers that are.
And I do hate migrant.
That's going to be a great flashpoint.
Okay.
But I've been in the houses that half of our workers lived in Winchester, and it's not pretty either.
No.
So farm housing.
All right, Joe.
Just a question on next meeting. We have we're going to continue with this discussion, and then we also have floodplain.
That's correct, right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, the last time we got into discussion on the floodplain, it just kept on going and going and going. And I'm not suggesting how you run the meeting, but maybe we should limit it to say.
Do you want to change the agenda right now?
Do we want to say that an hour?
I'm certain.
An hour will be one, okay. And then the hour will be the other. And if we don't get
to topic,
I felt bad with the folks that were here from the public last time, and then we never got.
That's fine.
Topic.
That's fine. We'll talk about that at our. Bill, there's one more thing we need to do.
Got like 2 minutes.
Elections.
I'd like to nominate Michael Capretti as chair and
second
the Ehrman as vice chair for next term.
Who's seconding?
Are you still a yes?
Second.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
Are you sure?
No. I'm good.
Did you want to vote?
No, but I want to speak to the calendar.
Okay, let's get this done. Is there any other motions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, that carries. Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Congratulations.
All right. Yes. You have the floor.
I just wanted to remind everyone we must be vigilant. We have a very limited time for SOPS review for this project, and we're already bringing our first topic back at the next meeting. So I don't know if you want to extend the meeting time or how you want to handle it, but this is the schedule we're working within, so we won't be able to bring everything back to two meetings. So any input?
SOP has five meetings slated for the forward. Is that right? Oh, is it five or seven?
Seven.
Seven. But we have five more to go. Right, we've had two.
Well, you have six. Six.
Yeah, we've.
Well, you'll have six more because seven from.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, six from today.
We hear you. I hear you as the chair.
Next meeting will be ag operation, ag production, cultural tourism, and bringing back some of the topics from today.
Right. And the next one we'll have TLUC recommendations within that.
Correct.
So that's going to be a little different than what we just saw. A little bit.
We had TLUC, and we had those.
Well, yeah, well this that, that's
direction.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be specific direction.
Voted direction.
What about tonight? Are you saying go to a so should we talk about whatever you want to do?
Let's just do a retreat.
We could do a retreat.
I mean, if you guys want to talk about that in half an hour, we can talk about it, but it's got to be 8:30. It's not going to be at the end.
Yeah. The room's not available past 11.
Right. So it'd have to be 8:30.
Or if the Dulles room's ever finished.
Ever?
So who wants to have a baby in the meeting?
I think let's get through the next meeting. We'll talk about it with staff, and we'll have update the next meeting. Right now, let's leave it where it is. We'll allocate some time to Bev.
What I'd say too, I'm frustrated. I feel like FOD should be a much shorter discussion. I do think that there's a lot of misperception, misinformation going on about that. I hope we can sort through relatively quickly because I think we're wasting a lot of time just because just not understanding what the rules actually say currently. Then just for the future topic, I know that cultural tourism ready on the next, is it already November? Oh, man.
It's not November yet.
Well, the next meeting is September. But that pertains directly into agritourism. Right. So
yeah. There's going to start being a lot of overlap in these walrus discussions.
Yeah. So is there any, I guess for staff, not to put you on the spot, but will packages come at the same time as we have them now? Or could we get them a couple days earlier?
Fearless.
Or can we talk about that at our leadership?
Let's talk about it at leadership, and I'll touch base with staff.
Okay. And you're available for the November meeting? Talk about FOD. Did I just hear you say that?
Okay.
9 o'clock. Okay, we're adjourned. Everybody on the.
That's fun, right?
Next meeting was that November 1st.
And Steve Price, his wife, and I popped the table and were holding it while they fixed it, and we did not even spill. One drop of water.
I've been pressed. I've been pressed.
So that's what happened on our side. I don't know. See you next.
Yeah, Chris says last night.
It's exciting.
Two of my people can't come to back to meetings. And now I'm
another event. All right.
Thanks.
For
I'm not punishing. I'm
going to this.
The, I'll take it. Or with.